Protégé Podcast, the career advice, inspiration, and truth you need for your career journey.
Hi, my name is Jordan. You should listen to my dad's podcast. Bye.
I'm Rory Verrett. Welcome to Protégé Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. I'm recording this on Sunday, June 18th, which also happens to be my birthday. I am in Houston, Texas, doing a little bit of work. I am the keynote speaker at the Airport Minority Advisory Council Conference at their awards luncheon on Monday. So I spent the weekend in Chicago and had to fly back to DC and then back to Houston on my birthday, but my wife said she is going to just relocate my birthday to next weekend and get everyone together for some fun this upcoming weekend. If you hear some background noise, I am at the Marriott Marquis in downtown Houston, and there is a big party going on at the AMAC conference, and they're playing Prince and Stevie Wonder and some covers of Michael Jackson. So if you hear some background noise, it's about 500 or so people dressed in white having a blast. I'm going to try to get through the last bit of the podcast and then work on my speech and get ready for tomorrow. Today on the podcast, we're talking to Bernie Lawrence Watkins, Bernie the attorney, one of the top entertainment lawyers in the country, and she's going to talk about what her experience has been like as a woman trailblazer in the entertainment law field. She's also going to talk about what it's like to manage a recording artist who just so happens to be your son. And then finally, Bernie has some advice for any young lawyers or mid-career professionals who want to pivot to a career in entertainment law. Bernie's got an incredible story, and I won't steal her thunder, but she was almost the DJ in a well-regarded hip-hop trio that I'm sure any of you older than 35 or 40, you dance to their music. So up next on Protégé Podcast, Bernie, the entertainment attorney, is never scared. I am so thrilled to welcome to Protégé Podcast one of the top entertainment lawyers in America. They call her Bernie the Attorney, and she is the founder of B. Lawrence Watkins & Associates. Bernie, welcome to Protégé Podcast.
Thank you so much, Rory, for such a warm welcome. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
All right, Bernie, I am not going to satisfy all of my entertainment gossip yearnings, which are many. I try to keep them hidden. We're going to talk about your career and what advice you would give to people going into the entertainment field, into entertainment law. But first, we want to learn about the beginning. So tell us where you're from and how you grew up.
Okay, Rory, thank you very much once again. I am originally from Dominica, the West Indies. I came to the United States at the age of 4. I moved to New York City with my family. And I was growing up during the time of the evolution of hip hop. And as a young teen, I always loved music and I thought that I was going to sing. A lot of people in my neighborhood were creating beats, rapping, including my brother. I was raised with the likes of Kid and Play, Herbie Lovebug, who is the founder of Salt and Pepper. And I was also attending a performance high school, which is known as LaGuardia High School of Music and Arts and the Performing Arts. And in my high school, I was classmates with Slick Rick, Dana Dane,
wow,
and Carl Payne, and I can't remember her name. She was also on Martin.
Yes.
So we were all classmates, and I was part of a rap group, believe it or not, and the name of the rap group was called Supernature. Supernature is the name, if you know about hip hop, is the name that was given to Salt and Pepper. We were given that name by Herbie Lovebug prior to him founding the group Salt and Pepper. He started with me along with two of my friends, one by the name of Tasha, who was known as Miss Jones. She was a radio personality in the early 90s. And another young lady by the name of Crystal. And he wrote everything for us, but they didn't particularly care for what he would write, so they dropped out of the group. And around that time, Herbie was looking to put out a record, which was the answer back to the show that was performed by Slick Rick and Dougie Fresh. He was dating Salt, who's known, whose legal name is Cheryl, and her best friend was Pepper. And he was looking for a DJ and asked me to be the DJ of the group, which was Spinderella.
Oh, wow.
I had that opportunity, presented it to my parents. They weren't very fond of it. And they said, you know, we don't want you doing music. You have to go to college. So like, you know, I told Herbie, can't do the music thing. And he said, well, if you were part of the group, the only time you really need to be around is when you're on tour. And unfortunately, that'll be the only time you really get paid. So I said, okay, well, I'll go to college. I decided to go to Howard University. And my brother Ron came along with me. And while we were at Howard together, he linked up with Derek D. Dot Angeletti, who we know as the Mad Rapper. And at that time, Ron and D-Dot formed a rap group called Two Kings and a Cypher. They were able to get a record deal with Bahia Entertainment, which was under Columbia Records at the time. And it was a big deal during that time at Howard University. They did some touring along the East Coast and in the Southeast region, but eventually lost the deal. And when they lost that record deal, I saw how it affected my brother, and my brother and I are extremely close. So I made it a point to go to law school at that time because I said I was going to protect every artist that was in a bad deal and help them get out of their bad deals and get the right deals. And that one day I'd be working with people like Herbie and Kid and Play. So I pretty much had my mindset on going to law school and pursuing entertainment law when I was at Howard University. When I, and then working with my brother Ron. So he ended up moving to New York City around 95 to work with Puff because Puff was starting Bad Boy Entertainment. And during that time, I was in law school. So the goal was when I get out of law school, I'm going to work with my brother. That was always our plan. While Ron hooked up with Puff, he was one of their top successful producers over at Bad Boy, producing for Faith Evans, 112. When I got out of law school, to be honest, I was a bit intimidated by his career because he had a lot of successful singles that were out in the marketplace, including Phenomenon by LL. He had Been Around the World by Puff. There was a song he did for Faith called I Love You. It's just a lot of different records. So it was actually not I Love You. It was Love Like This Before and there was another record. I can't think of
the soundtrack of us growing up as adults, basically. All of that music, that was
the 90s. Money, Power, Respect. I mean, it was just a lot of hits. So while I was finishing up at University of Baltimore, which is where I went to law school, I contacted Herbie. And Herbie moved to Atlanta. And I said, Herbie, you know, why don't you have any black lawyers working for you? And he said, well, because y'all are not the ones playing golf. You're not on a golf course cutting the deals. And I said, well, I need you to give me that opportunity. So he said, okay, well, when you finish law school, come down to Atlanta. Atlanta is the new entertainment capital. Because I, at that time, I was deciding whether or not I need to go to L.A. or come back to New York. And he said, just move to Atlanta. So I moved to Atlanta, and he had all this property. He had over 50 acres on the south side of town, and he showed me where he was building his entertainment recording studio. To make a long story short, things were taking much longer to progress than what I expected. So I ended up getting a job at Kilpatrick Stockton just to get some income because, you know, at that time I had no interest in working for a firm. I just wanted to work at a record label and be an executive. So I got a job in litigation so I could get some income. I did some work for Herbie here and there, but it wasn't anything that was groundbreaking.
Okay.
So around 1999, my husband Dana was, he frequented a particular barbershop, and his barber was also a producer. He was 18. He was just starting out with music, and he told him that there's this guy at the radio station by the name of Chris Bridges, who's coming out with his first album. And he thinks he had a few records on the album. And he asked Dana if Dana knew of a lawyer that he can work with, because he didn't want to use the same lawyer as Chris Bridges. So Dana said, oh, my wife is a lawyer and she's an entertainment lawyer. And at that time, I wasn't really heavily involved in entertainment. I was basically trying to find my way around Atlanta, attending open mics. That wasn't really working either. So the name of the producer is Chandre. He came to the house. I met with him. He played some of his tracks. I loved his music because of such a different sound. Turned out his first record with Chris Bridges, who we know as Ludacris, was What's Your Fantasy. That record was a big hit, and it's a record that still continues to play every day on the radio. My client ended up producing six records, which was half of Ludacris's first album. Album went on to sell several million copies. And then my client went on to produce half of Ludacris's second album, which was also a major success. And around that time, I was meeting with a lot of industry executives, flying back and forth to New York once a month, and also attending industry functions, because in the entertainment industry, a lot of it is who you know, and you have to develop relationships and network with the right people.
Okay.
So I would bring my producers to New York, introduce their new sound, and just try to get placements on various projects that the record labels had at the time. My practice was built on representing music producers and songwriters. My brother and I connected around 2000, and the first project he gave me was a Luther Vandross contract. I have to tell you, I was so nervous when I got that contract.
You're about to mess up Luther's money. But Bernie, let me ask you a question related to this period when you're breaking into the industry and you're a young woman, lawyer, and you're working with some of these high profile acts. What was it like working in a male dominated industry?
To be honest, I didn't even look at it that way. I looked at it more so as a challenge to myself that I can do it. Because I'll tell you an interesting story. When I was in law school, I worked for a very small firm. And the person that owned the firm was very judgmental. And he made a comment, not to me, but to a young lady that worked in the office. She was the office manager. And he said to her that I was not going to be anything. And I was just a pretty wrapped up box with nothing on the inside. Mm. So when she told me that, that instilled so much fire in me to want to succeed. And I used that to always push myself and to not allow anything that anybody said about me to affect my ability to move forward. Mm-hmm. Any negative sayings or any criticism, I would use to motivate myself more.
So when we look at your roster of clients, I mean, it reads like a list of the recording industry elite. Lil Wayne, T.I., Nicki Minaj, Ludacris, 50 Cent, P. Diddy, Usher, Justin Bieber, and the list goes on. It would seem like you've got this glamorous career. You know, I can imagine you're going to industry conferences, you're hanging out with these stars. Do a bit of demystifying the life and career of a high-level entertainment lawyer. What's it really like that people might not know?
Okay, well, what I'd like to say is I have clients who have composed music for some of the top industry recording artists in the country. And it's been a challenge, but it's also been fun. When you are working with notable people, of course, you're dealing with a lot of egos. So you have to know how to massage those egos and avoid stepping on people's toes. And in terms of attending certain events, industry events, yes, in the beginning, it's very fun. It's exciting because it's new. And then you're seeing celebrities and you're able to interact with celebrities. But that's really not what the practice of entertainment law is about. It's about really the nitty-gritty of preparing these contracts, understanding all the legal terms that are in there, making sure that your client is properly protected, dealing with these opposing counsels who are egotistic and you think your client is the best, they think their client is the best. So it may take you 3-4 months to close a deal. And when you're a new lawyer on the scene, people don't know you, they don't call you back. You call them, they're very rude, they're disrespectful. You send them an email, they don't respond. They don't, you know, they treat you like you're nothing. Because it's almost like you don't have status. And it's quite interesting because, you know, a lot of lawyers, industry, I call them industry lawyers who have made a name for themselves, feel like you're not at their level and they don't have to be very responsive until you get a client that is recognizable, then they're more willing to exchange information with you, want to call you back and talk to you. And then you see the wheels turning because now they may need something from you. And once your name is mentioned along with others, then they become more respectful of who you are as a person and want to deal with you because they feel now you're on that same level. It's quite interesting. And you have to have thick skin. It's a very cutthroat industry for lawyers because you do have situations where you have a hot client. Next thing you know, one of the so-called hot industry lawyers who has all the name clients, they're talking to your client now in your client's ear, trying to convince your client to come over to their firm.
So it's not unlike what happens on Straight Outta Compton, for instance, where, you know, Suge Knight was trying to pull NWA from the lawyer that did their original deal.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because unfortunately, we have a lot of people who still think white is right. And they'll be with a small firm in the beginning, but once they reach status, it's time to move on with that big firm, because now that big firm can get them the right type of deals that they need. They can get them endorsement situations. They can get them on bigger projects to work with bigger artists. That's the thought process. Mm-hmm. They can get them more money. They think that the small firms don't have the ability or the knowledge to negotiate those type of deals. It's such a misconception, and that's something that really needs to change today, because it still exists.
I see.
Another thing regarding how this work is not as glamorous as people may think it to be is I ran into a situation with a client who caused me to ride around in my car every day with two guns because I felt like my life was being threatened. Well, wow. And I feel like my life was actually being threatened.
Wow. I mean, what? How did it get to that point?
Well, this particular client had been trolling me for probably, I'd say, 3 years. Hmm. And they finally paid the retainer. And within 6 months of paying the retainer, they contacted me about getting a refund. So I told the client, come to my office. Let's have a conversation to find out what's going on. The client ended up showing up to my office while I was on a conference call. So while I was on the call, I invited him into my office. I placed the call on mute. I invited him into my office. He sat down and he would not move. Mm. So ended up getting off the call, asked him what the problem was. And he said he wanted his money back and needed it now because he had no money. He had no place to live. He had he just came from the supermarket and he basically was stealing food. Mm. He got caught, but they let him go because he explained to them that he had really nothing, didn't have any money to pay. So he came to the office to get his retainer back. And I said, well, I'm about to participate. I'm about to volunteer for this event for a couple of hours. If you come back this evening, let's talk about it. So I went to my appointment, came back. He didn't show up. The next morning, he showed up to my office, and he apparently was pacing back and forth. He had written an email that he sent to me threatening me. Mm. If I didn't give him back the retainer, that he was coming to kill me and he would kill my father, he would kill my family. And he knew where my office was and he was showing up to my office. I got a call from my office. I wasn't there at the time. I got a call and I told them do not let him in. Mm. And I called the police. By the time the police got there, he was gone. He ended up sending me another email threatening my life and then threatening my son's life because he knew who my son, he said he knew what my son looked like. Mm, he had been following me. So I filled out a police report and the police officer told me that they consider this a terroristic threat and I needed to restraining order. So I filed for that. I went and got two guns. I kept one at the office and I kept one in my car.
Oh my goodness.
I started going to the shooting range. I went to the shooting range that Friday and I said, I had to protect myself. I'm not going to allow a person like that appearing to be deranged come after me for their retainer. I eventually paid the retainer. You know, I gave the retainer back because I didn't want to deal with that nonsense. But it's just something that people should not have to go through. But you just never know who you're dealing with. If you didn't grow up with that person, you don't know much about that person. It's hard to tell because they put on a front And I never saw this in that person. And it was a whole, it was a dark side that I saw, and, you know, that was revealed. And I never thought that something like that would ever happen to me. But being a woman, working for myself, leaving my office late at night at times, I needed to be protected. And I wasn't, I'll tell you, I wasn't afraid to use it. I knew how to use it.
Wow. We have four clients here at Protege Search, and I hope I never have to buy a gun because because one of them goes crazy like that. That is beyond the pale.
Yeah. You know, I'm not, it's not that I'm a lover of guns, but in this situation, I'll tell you one thing. I became very brave and was ready to use it if I had to.
So not only are you this leader of a law firm that's gaining prominence, you're hitting major strides in your career representing these top tier artists. You're also a mother and you're a wife. And in particular, you are also helping manage the career of one of your sons who is an amazing artist in his own right. What advice would you give to parents that find out their child has amazing creative talent and need to give them some professional support and infrastructure while they're still a teenager?
Great question, Rory. When you find that your child has talent, my advice is that you help and encourage your child to develop that talent. Mm-hmm. When I realized my child was talented, it wasn't because it was something he exposed me to. It was something that I saw that he posted on YouTube. I saw a video of him dancing. And I also noticed that he would write in his composition book these little raps. And he would rap around the house. So I have some friends and clients who are industry executives. I turned to one of my good friends and partners and said, I want you to watch this video of my son. So I sent them the video. I sent them the link to the video. He watched it and he said, I want him to go in the studio. And my son was 10 at the time. And I said, well, I think he's too young. So when he was 12, when he turned 12, I sent him another link and he said, I want him to be in the studio because I think your son has what it takes. Wow. So I said, okay. I brought my son to the studio. He recorded his first song. It took him probably all weekend. We were there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. He recorded that first song, and he was real nervous. That next weekend, we took him back. It took him a day to record that second song. We were at the studio for a day, and that came out better. And then by the time he recorded his third record, he was in a flow. I mean, he was just... he was just like in his element. And at first I couldn't, he didn't want me watching him perform. So I had to step out of the room. And when I heard it and I said, oh my goodness, you got it. And he said, are you serious? Do you really like it? Or are you just saying it because you're my mother? I said, no, you got what it takes. I'm not going to, if you don't have talent, I'm going to tell you because I only work with recognizable talent. I don't work with subpar talent. And that's not going to happen just because you're my son. So my client became my partner and we worked to develop my son. We had him in the studio. We put out an EP and had him performing all around Atlanta, and his base started growing. And, my client, who's my partner, got a call from a record exec and said he was looking to put together a group. He had two male singers and he was looking for a rapper. And he knew of anyone. And that's when he said, oh, there's this kid called Price. And he sent them a link to a video that my son did. But this record exec didn't know that I was his mother, because what we were doing is we were promoting him around town as one of our signed artists, but not as me, the mom, because I wanted him to be able to stand on his own. And long story short, he ended up getting a record deal with RCA Records, and he signed with a group. And he lived out in LA for some time. That was a challenging experience because here I am, the momager, the lawyer, and the mom. He thought that I was just the mom getting in the way. Mind you, he is 16 years old. Mm. He's thinking, I don't know anything. And I don't know how things are supposed to work. And I'm saying, wait a minute. I've been doing this for 12 years at that time. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean I don't know how this works? I do this professionally for people. They pay me for this.
Like,
they
son,
pay me for advice.
Son, I made you and I can make you again.
Exactly. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, he did not want to listen. It was like talking to a brick wall.
Wow.
So I had to take him to some people who said, you know, yeah, I introduced him to a few people. Mm-hmm. And in that meeting, they're saying, oh, my goodness, you don't know how fortunate for you to have her as your mother.
Right.
You forever be protected. So when he saw how people respected me, mm-hmm. that's when his thought process started changing.
That's amazing. You know, I can't let you off the hook. Speaking of famous people that you are giving advice to, you are friends with Phaedra from Real Housewives of Atlanta. Like, y'all go way back.
We surely do. We go way back.
So
same days.
So tell us just in a little bit of detail, is Phaedra really like that in real life? Are we seeing the real Phaedra as somebody who's her longtime friend?
Well, I'll tell you this about Ms. Phaedra Parks. Phaedra is no nonsense. Hmm. If you say something to her, you better believe she is going to cut you, and she's going to cut you real sharp with that tongue. She is quick with it. She thinks on her feet. And if you're not prepared, then you're going to fall. She's no joke. That's the best way I would sum her up.
So
I know she has that Southern Belle image, but she is no nonsense.
I'm sure my listeners will appreciate that insight on one of the current modern stars of reality TV. She's got 2 million Instagram followers, which is, you know, that's pretty good for reality TV. Listen, as we wrap up, what advice would you give to a young attorney who wants to break into entertainment law? Things you wish you knew when you were breaking into the industry.
I would tell a young entertainment lawyer today to perfect being a lawyer first.
Mm.
Understand the law of what it is that you're trying to get into. Too many lawyers today I see are more focused on branding themselves on social media. They're promoting and putting together the proper pictures and creating all these videos.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. However, they don't have the knowledge to back up the client base. So once you start getting clients, if you can't do the work,
mm-hmm.
you're going to lose that client.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the worst thing for you as a young lawyer trying to grow in this business and developing a name and reputation for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice to them is understand what an entertainment lawyer is. Understand the other areas that surround entertainment, because you don't just have to focus on music, film, and television. You can also focus on employment law for entertainers. You can be a tax lawyer and work with entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many other areas of law that you can focus on. Trademarks, because entertainers always need, they're always looking to have their trademarks done for either a brand that they're developing. They have to trademark their names. They have to copyright their creative works. So there's other areas that you can grow in and develop. And once you become more knowledgeable, you can help take your practice to the next level and then get the right type of client base that you're looking to get. So, you know, now, you know, I don't represent just artists in entertainment. I also represent athletes in entertainment as well. So mm-hmm. it's a nice mix of clients that I have.
I used to always tell people when they interviewed at the NFL, I would say, please don't lead with I love football, because that puts you among 99% of people interviewing and, you know, 60% of the American population. I'm trying to figure out whether you're a good accountant, a good lawyer, a good IT executive, a good finance executive. The excellence has to precede any affinity you have for the industry. Wouldn't you agree?
Definitely. That is so important, because so many people lose focus and they get into entertainment for the wrong reasons. They are blinded by the glitz and glamour and they think that's what it's all about. But no, it's a lot of hard work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm building my practice. I probably work 12 to 16 hours a day, certain days.
Wow.
Yes, I can take time off. That's the beauty of being an entrepreneur and having my own. But I work very, very hard, and my clients know that, and they appreciate that about me.
They call her Bernie the Attorney. She is the founder of B. Lawrence Watkins & Associates. She's worked with some of the top entertainment stars in the world, and she is dishing it all right now on Protégé Podcast. Bernie, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your insights with our listeners.
Well, thank you again, Rory, for such an opportunity. It's been a great experience talking with you and talking to your listeners, and I look forward to working with you again in the future.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Bernie, the entertainment attorney. Now it's time for the breakdown. All right, on the breakdown, we're talking about insights that you can apply in your effort to transition in your career. When you are making a major transition, if you're working as an accountant or a lawyer and you want to move into one of these exclusive industries like tech or entertainment or sports, or you want to pivot from one career platform, maybe you're in corporate or nonprofit and want to move to be an entrepreneur, here are a couple of things to think about as you embark on that transition. Number one, you have to do your research about the real practical activities and some of the challenges in those new areas, those new functions, those new industries. You can't simply dive into it and take any foot you have in the door and think that that's going to give you a long runway to success in that field. There are some activities, as Bernie talked about, that you may find simply untoward or unsavory or not to your liking. As the young people say, maybe you're not about that life, and you'll find out about it way too late. This is why you have to attend some industry conferences, get a mentor in this field, read as much as possible, and talk to people. Go on LinkedIn, meet someone that works in the new function, the new industry, or is an entrepreneur with a similar business, and just ask them for 15 minutes of their time to get a real live perspective of what their day is like, what their weeks are like, and what are the downsides in that particular field or function. Steep yourself in the real live activities so you know what you're getting involved in. Number two, I want you to financially plan in a very smart way for your transition. Most times when you are transitioning to either entrepreneurship from a corporate job or to one of these exclusive industries like media, entertainment, or tech, there's a long line of people waiting to get into those jobs. You have to plan smartly on the financial side, save up 6 to 12 months of income so that you are not desperate for income or salary as you are paying your dues in this new function or paying your dues as an entrepreneur. Plan smartly on the financial side and with your spouse to set realistic expectations about what your lives are going to be like. So that's the breakdown. When you're making these major transitions like Bernie Watkins talked about, when you are moving into entertainment or tech or sports, understand the practical realities of those new industries and functions and steep yourself in that information and get to know people who are working in those fields, before you take the big leap. And number two, make a smart financial plan for your transition.
Thank you for tuning in to Protégé Podcast. Please check us out on social media at Protégé Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and let us know your thoughts on topics we can cover on the next Protégé Podcast.